for tape, CDs, DVDs, to our publication, Voices from His Excellent Glory, Declaring the Kingdom, write P.O. Box 21516, Hot Springs, Arkansas, zip 71903. Our website is www.LakeHamiltonBibleCamp.com and LHBCOnline.com. There are many hundreds of free audio files there. It's like going to Bible school at home. This is the Friday afternoon 1:15 Ladies Deliverance Service, May the 23rd, 2008. Carla Batod is the speaker of the service, teaching on love.
Well, let's open with prayer. Well, Father, we just ask you to come and join us. We know you're here because where two or three are gathered together, you are here in the midst of us, and we thank you, Lord, that even though this is a ladies' meeting, you're sitting in here with us, and we're glad to have you. And Lord, I just ask you to orchestrate this meeting from beginning to end, and I thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, it's always interesting to see a theme develop in these camps, and Tom really hit on a lot of scriptures that are not in my teaching that we'll be able to draw from those that he read about love, because I was going to talk about your love life. How's your love life? That's what this is called. I remember when my love life got a checkup. I was, I'd been a Christian probably for a good 10 years. I had been saved and in a church and in the Word and loving the Lord and wanting to serve the Lord with all my heart, and did that in the best way that I knew how. And I was working. I taught Sunday school. I taught a junior high Sunday school class, and I was in an after-school youth program. And I served on this committee and that committee, and I was a deaconess in the church, and all these things. I was very busy. And one year, it was the first year that all my kids were in school. And I thought, boy, when they get in school, I can really work for the Lord, because I'll have all day, every day. Well, much to my surprise, as that time neared, the Lord said that he wanted me to get out of the youth program, which I just loved. It was the after-school thing. Even though the children got out of school, they had a nursery, and I could go and do that. The Lord said, get out. And I went to my pastor, and I said, I'm going to have to resign from the youth club. And he said, I think you better go pray about that. And I said, I think not, because I had learned about Balaam. You know the story of Balaam? He was being hired to go and curse Israel. And he said, let me pray about it when they came to him. And so he prayed about it, and God said, no, you do not go, for they're my people. Well, so the king that was trying to hire him sent some princes with lots of goodies on camelback or donkeyback or whatever. They packed down their stuff, and they had clothes and money and oils and all this stuff. And old Balaam saw all that stuff, and he was interested. So he said, well, I tell you what, y'all stay, and I'll pray about it. Big mistake. Once the Lord tells you something, you better not pray about it again, because he will let you do whatever it is you will. And then disaster usually follows. So when my pastor said, I think you better go pray about that again. I don't want to run into any talking donkeys. So I got out of this youth club, out of the Sunday school class. He took me out of everything. So when the kids were in school the first day, I was on the porch drinking coffee, had my Bible, and was kind of confused. You know, Lord, I have more time to serve you than I've ever had before, and you made me get out of everything. Now, I don't understand that. But while I'm out of everything, I'm just going to draw closer to you, and I want you to teach me how to really love my husband and children. And I thought, what did I say? Teach me how to love my husband and children. So now I'm having an argument with myself. I love my husband and children. I mean, after all, I take care of them. I cook for them. I do their laundry. And he said, that's just mechanics. Anybody can do that. Okay. Well, then, okay. Well, what is love anyway? That's where it led me. And I began to learn about love. So this is when my love life got a checkup, and it was a rude awakening. I want us to turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 13. 1 Corinthians. Actually, that was the answer to my question when I said, well, what is love anyway? This chapter came to my mind because we all know this chapter as the love chapter, do we not? So I got my Bible. I had my Bible with me, and I opened it to 1 Corinthians 13. And I started reading, and I've always read my Bible out loud because faith comes by hearing and hearing by the Word. So while I'm seeing it, like Tom said earlier, gates, the ears, the eyes, the mouth, these things are gates. And so if you fill it all with the Word, then you're going to absorb more of it. So I start speaking. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not love, I am become as sounding bronze or a tinkling cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains and have not love, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned and have not love, it profits me nothing. So I stop reading and I'm thinking, wow, you know, there's a lot of stuff in these few scriptures. Speaking with the tongues of men and angels, have the gift of prophecy, and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith, I can remove mountains. But if I have not love, I am nothing. And it goes on to say, even though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, that means like a martyr, you would sacrifice your life to be burned for the cause of God and Christ, and have not love, it profits me nothing. Love suffereth long and is kind. Right there, I had to stop. It was like this chainsaw just cut me off at the knees. And that's in my spirit, that's where I dropped when I read that. Because love suffereth long and is kind. I didn't do either one of those. I didn't suffer long. I might suffer for a split second. You can ask Katie or any of my other. In fact, Katie said, well, how many of those meetings, you know, do they have? And I said, well, we start at 6 in the morning, and then we eat at 8 and have a meeting at 10 and eat at 12 and have a meeting at 1:15 and a meeting at 3 and we eat at 5 and have a meeting at 7. And she went, I said, but Katie, I don't expect you to make all of those meetings. I said, if you feel like coming, I want you to come, and if you don't, don't. She said, well, Kyle told me, because Kyle was up here a couple of times, and I think he made it to maybe one meeting, and this was over, was it the 4th of July? It was a long meeting. I don't remember when it was, but anyway, he made it to maybe one meeting. He said, well, I can tell you, if you don't make a bunch of them, you're going to see one mad Christian woman. And I said, that's not why I got angry with Kyle. It was his behavior that made me angry. He didn't act like that when he was little, but as an adult, he was in my face, and I didn't like it. He pushed a button. So anyway, all of my children, and Mike especially, and my own self. I know I didn't suffer long. If I suffered at all, I lost it. I got ugly. I got angry. I mean, everybody would scatter. I didn't even like myself. So when I read that, I knew immediately why God took me out of everything. He even said when I began to cry, because I couldn't get past that first one, love suffereth long and is kind. And not only love suffereth long and is kind, love suffereth long and is kind while it's suffering. Oh! No, that was not me. And God so very sweetly said, after he showed me a motion picture, I mean, I started seeing all of these times of me losing my temper, of me speaking harshly, screaming, hollering, stomping, huffing, puffing, pouting, you know, making a scene, embarrassing myself and others. It was bad. No, of course, I didn't do that at church. You realize that didn't happen in the meetings. So God showed me all of these. Oh, he was just showing me one after another, after another, after another. And I just cried and cried and cried and cried and cried. I was broken. And God said, you see, Carla, I am pleased that you want to serve me. But you've got to get it right in your home first. Now that was, and I thought it was just me. I thought everybody else had it down. But one thing that really ministered to me when Philip was here, and I bought the book, Get Real with God, and I could relate to everything in that book. And I thought, you know what, it's not just me. There's lots of people out here that are serving God. They're busy doing the works of God, but they don't have it at home. And the reason is because they're doing it without the motivation is not proper. If it's not motivated by love, we're wasting our time. And that was my problem. I wanted to please God, and God was pleased that I wanted to please him, but he wanted me to have the right motive and the right attitude and to be doing this out of love, not out of duty, not out of position, you know, looking for prominence or position or whatever, which never really was my deal. But I just wanted to please God. So now, God, now I have entered into the biggest challenge in my life. First of all, okay, I want to look at the rest of these things. Love suffereth long and is kind. Love envieth not. Love vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up, doth not behave itself unseemly, seeks not its own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth, beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Love never fails. But whether there be prophecies, they shall be done away. Whether there be tongues, they shall cease. Whether there be knowledge, it shall vanish away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part, but when that which is perfect is come, then that which is in part shall be done away. When I was a child, I spoke as a child, I understood as a child, I thought as a child, but when I became a man, I put away childish things. For now we see in a mirror darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then shall I know even also as I am known. And now abideth faith, hope, and love, these three. But the greatest of these is love. So that's why I wanted us to see and check and examine ourselves. How is our love life? Okay. These words, some definitions. Love envieth not. That means you're not moved with jealousy or covet. It means hot, anger, malice, indignation. So see, we can look at these words, it envieth not and is not moved with jealousy. Now, I don't know if envy and jealousy is a problem that you struggle with, but it was huge in my life. I was envious of my single friends that had gone on to college. Here I was with three little babies and just a ton of responsibility and hard work. Being a mother is hard work. Day in and day out is hard work. There are joys, but there's a lot of hard work. And it gets old fast. And so I was envious of my cousin who went to college. She wasn't married. She didn't have any babies. She graduated from college. Now she was working, made great money, took vacations to places I would only look at in a magazine. Of course, while she was doing all this, she really wanted to be married and have children. Isn't that just, that's the way it always is. But I was envious, and I was jealous of their freedom, of their lack of burdens. So we see that's not love. There's no room for that in love. It vaunteth not itself. That means it's not puffed up. It doesn't have vanity. And that means in sense of excessive pride in one's achievements. It's prideful. I had pride. That was one of the things that God really had to break in me. It was a spirit that came down through the generational line. After I learned about pride, I could see it. You know, when I can see it, I can see it in my children. My oldest son is in medical school, and he's always been very smart. He can recall stuff. But I always prayed that for him, you know, and I told him, I said, that is a gift from God. Don't you ever feel better than anybody else because you have that, because it's a gift. But because he has done so well in school and excelled, he, you know, it's hard for a kid not to feel prideful of himself. And we are proud of him. We are proud of him and his accomplishments. But he struggles with pride. He knows it. And it bothers him. And people tell him, you know, you're prideful. And it just wounds him because he wants so badly to be a humble person. So he's working really hard on his humbleness. And when he's successful at it, he calls me and tells me. And Mike said, what did Wade want? I said, oh, he was so humble today and proud of it. See, you know, the devil is so, he's just so disgusting. Because he knows our weakness. He knows our strengths and he knows our weakness. And even as, you know, as God dealt with my pride through my children, because believe me, ooh, we've been places that we never thought we would go. We've had one graduate magna cum laude from college, and we've had one who was released from prison, and the prisoner, the guard, whatever they call him, said, Kyle was a model prisoner. And I said, oh, thank you for telling me that. If there's anything that I can walk away from this with, it is that Kyle was a model prisoner. And I am glad that God's brought me to the place where, you know, there's no more pride, but guess what? There's no more shame. That is a good thing. I know it's a shameful thing. It's like when I express things to my relatives, say, oh, that just must break your heart. And I would say, no, you know what? It's heartbreaking, but it doesn't break my heart. I have perfect peace about it. There's no shame in it. It just, that's what God can do for you. I'm telling you, the love of God, where this is going, I'll tell you the end from the beginning. Let's go to, I'm going to Revelations, the book of Revelations in Carla's book. It's the end from the beginning. is that I don't care what your struggle is, the love of God is the answer for it. It will transform anything in your life that you are struggling with. And I had a lot of struggles, and the love of God is what transformed my life. Totally. It healed me. It was a miraculous healing from depression. I'd been in depression for 4 years because it was the lack of love. I had no love. I thought I knew what love was, but the revelation was I didn't know what love was. I didn't know how to love myself. I didn't love myself. I wasn't convinced that anybody loved me. Even though I was the baby of the family, doted over, none of that meant anything, because guess what? The enemy comes and says, you're not loved. They don't love you. They don't want you. It's a spirit that came down through my family line. It's a generational thing. And depending on how you were born, the circumstances around your birth, there are so many things that affect our sense of self-worth. So many. But the enemy is always right there to tell you nobody loves you. Because this is his plan, is to make you feel like nobody loves you so he can isolate you, so he can kill you. That's his plan for all of us. He comes not but to steal, kill, and destroy. And I lived 30 years of a stolen life because of fear, rejection. Even though it wasn't an outward rejection, the spirit of rejection was there. And so for 30 years, I lived tormented. But the love of God changed every bit of that. So this love thing is really important, worth talking about. Love does not behave itself unseemly. You know, I looked up that word unseemly in the dictionary, and I was all of them. Behave shamefully, unbecoming. Oh, unbecoming. When that anger rises up in you, when somebody violates your happiness. You know, it's like one of the things that God used in this time was Kyle got an earache. I've never had an earache in my life. My children had never had earaches in their lives. And Mike went hunting, and so I had planned out my time very carefully, because when you have three children, you have to be structured. So they always, you know, we always ate at this time. They took a nap at this time. I knew when they were going to get up. We had supper at this time. It all was planned. So they went to bed around 8 or 8:30, and I was going to watch a movie that I had been wanting to see. I had rented it, and they had gone to bed, and I sat down in my chair and got ready to watch my movie, and I heard Kyle crying. So I went back to his bedroom to see what was wrong, and he was talking about his ear was hurting. Well, at first it was like, darn. But I thought, poor little thing, you know, I've never had an earache, but I know they're really painful. My neighbor's child had earaches all the time, so I called her and said, what do I do? So she, you know, get a warm this and do that and do that. I did everything and got him settled in bed and went back to my movie, and, you know, that didn't cut it. So he comes to the living room crying again. So I stopped the movie, and I thought, I know. Maybe if he sleeps in Mike's place, that will comfort him. Because he kept saying, I want Daddy, I want Daddy. I said, well, Daddy's not here. I mean, he's hunting. But I know what? You come sleep in Daddy's place. You can sleep on Daddy's pillow. And so I got him all set up in the bed. I put on a little praise tape for him and went back to the movie. And I heard him crying again. Well, I was so distracted, I couldn't even remember what I had watched already. So I thought, you know what, Lord? I'm just going to go to bed. So I turned off the tape. I turned everything off, and I crawled in bed with him and just, you know, loved on him. In the back of my mind, I was thinking, this is going to be a long night. because I really didn't think he was going to get any sleep. But he went to sleep. I prayed. I rebuked that pain and spoke a deep sleep over him. And he went to sleep and I went to sleep and we slept till the next morning. Now, I was amazed at that. I woke up the next morning and I was thankful to God that we both got sleep. Well, that was a pivotal thing in me. It was like, oh, Lord, thank you. Because without his touch in my life, that would have never happened. So this was like a process. I had already been healed of depression at the time God gave me this, because Katie was 6 months old when I started going to the psychiatrist, and she was just over, I went for 7 months. I can't do the math, but anyway, I went for 7 months. She was a year and a month. Is that right? When I was healed. So the real monster was healed and gone. There was no more of those, but the selfishness was still there. You know, I still wanted my time. I wanted my time. My time was important to me. But that was the night that I knew, thank you, Lord, you know, because I was more concerned with dealing with him than I was. I sacrificed my movie to do that. And that made me feel successful in the love area. Okay, so another word for unseemly is indecorous, which means violation of good manners. Rude, offensive and rude, demanding your own way, self-centered, easily offended, wearing feelings on your shoulders, and not easily provoked or offended. See, I was all those things. And that has nothing to do with love. So if we have these things in our lives, we have a love issue that needs to be dealt with. You get angry easy. You get your feelings hurt easy. You find yourself avoiding people that you know are going to be offensive. You hold grudges, and you go from person to person to person with it. You know, that is what Tom was talking about, gossiping. And it's character assassination when you go and slander a person. And you want that person to join in with your offense. You're really wanting them to join in with your offense and be offended at them too. And believe me, a lot of people do that. They just have a ball with this stuff. Okay. Love thinketh no evil. It doesn't think badly. Sometimes the mention of somebody's name, you can see it change on their face. And then they're going to tell you the last bad thing they did to you. And that's not love. It's character assassination. You plot to get revenge. Now, I never was revengeful. I would just throw a big fit and leave it at that. Revenge, I didn't need revenge. I just wanted the geyser to blow, and then I could, you know, be okay. It's the truth. It really is. And withholding forgiveness. You know, I couldn't pout because I couldn't keep my mouth shut that long. You know, I want to tell him something in a minute, and I didn't want to be pouting because then I wouldn't get to tell him. So I never was a pouter. Like I said, blow it and go. Not Mike. Now, it takes a long time for him to get over a blow. He was the one who held grudges and held unforgiveness and kept a list. I kept a list, too. So we each had our own list. Yeah, but that time you didn't. Yeah, and that time, yeah, but don't forget about that. It's just insane. I say it like this. Satan threw a party and we both went. Okay. And when you're like that, you're in prison, like Tom said. When you behave that way, you are put in a prison. If you don't forgive, then you're the one who is in the prison. So the word says, forgive us our debts as we forgive those who trespass against us. If we really understood what we're saying in that, Lord, I want you to forgive me the way I forgive others. We don't really know what we're praying when we say that. Because we would behave a lot differently if we did. And God began to hold me accountable for those things. Number six is rejoice not in iniquity. When you hear bad things, I mean, there are actually people who will get joy out of hearing that something bad happened. What happened yesterday? Oh, driving up here, I went through McDonald's to get something quick for us to eat, get back on the road, and I got a small Coke, and Kaylee had been, she would put her feet on the back of the seat, and somehow she could raise Katie's, that head thing, behind her, and Katie kept pushing it down and saying, "Stop that, Kaylee." Then she would take her shoulder things off of her seatbelt. Of course, I mean, she was in that car seat for 5.5 hours. I thought she did really well. But she would reach through, Katie's hair would be over the seat, and she would reach through and grab like one or two strands. And Katie would say, "Kaylee, stop that." Well, I saw her lean up again, and I popped her on the leg. I said, "Stop that now." Well, she, you know, she wants to be invisible then, and she gets her feelings hurt. And then I said, and then I was through. You know, I just popped her and said, "Don't do that again." So then she was upset with me. So I had her, her little chicken nuggets. I said, here's your chicken nuggets. "No, I don't want them." And I said, "Okay." I put them up. I said, "We'll give them to her when she wants them." So I went to move the, go from park to drive, and I knocked my Coke over and spilled the whole Coke in my car down in the, in, you know, on that mat where your feet go. So I had to get out of the car, get out, pull, you know, strategically move the mat where everything wouldn't spill. But, you know, I didn't have a fit. Oh, back in the day, it would have been, oh my goodness. Everybody in the next county would have known about it. There would have been a big fit. But anyway, I said, Kaylee's probably thinking, "That's what she gets for hitting me." And Katie said, "She probably is." Because, you know, we know what she got from our side of the family, but from the daddy side of the family, you know, we also know some things that are there. And one of the things is a huge spirit of offense. Huge. And we have it in our family, too. So she's got it double. So she's super sensitive whenever you correct her. So anyway, you don't behave yourself unseemly. And rejoiceth not in iniquity. That's what I was getting. You know, it was kind of like I was thinking for Kaylee. She's probably glad I spilled my Coke since I popped her. especially if it's somebody who's wronged us. And we get a pleasure out of bad things that happen to others. Actually are happiest when partaking in wickedness. So you don't rejoice in iniquity. But a lot of people really are not happy unless they're doing something wicked. And they also want to bring other people into their wickedness. Misery loves company, see? So they want you to be doing those things also. Okay. Number seven, love, God's love, bears all things. And that's the way we should be. Lamentations 3:22 said, "It's because of the Lord's great mercies we are not consumed. His compassions, they are new every morning. Great is thy faithfulness." That's the love of God. It bears all things. It believes all things. It never, ever gives up. It hopes all things. It has hope. And it endures. He endures our shortcomings. The way he loves us is the way he wants us to love others. But we don't do that. We love conditionally. We love according to our measure of love. If you loved me, you wouldn't do such and such. And people have a perverted sense. Until you have God's love, you have a perverted love. It's a perverted sense of love. I had a thought, but I'm not going to go there. Okay. Love is a major key to the kingdom of heaven. Whatsoever things are bound on earth, Tom read, whatsoever things are bound on earth are bound in heaven, and whatsoever things are loosed on earth are loosed in heaven. So when you withhold love from somebody, you are locking love to your own self from heaven. Whatever you bind, whatever you hold back on right here on earth, in this plane like this, it works just like that here. So if someone comes to you and there is a need for compassion and you don't have any compassion, oh, this is great. I had a beautiful mimosa tree on our property. And the electric company, the last time I was out of town when I got back, the electric company had come, and they don't tell you when they're coming. They just come and they trim their stuff and they leave. So when I got home, I was anxiously awaiting this beautiful mimosa tree to bloom. And as long as I had lived there, this would have only been the second year that it bloomed, because every year somebody would mow it down with the bush hog, or the electric company would come and cut it down, and I would just be so upset. So the electric company had come, and I was so wounded. I thought, ugh. And I had planted this little redbud tree, and some friends of the kids came and ran right over it with a trailer and broke it. I had a pink dogwood tree that I was nursing. I had planted it, and it was almost ready to bloom. And Kyle wanted to earn some money, so he got the bush hog. And I had it planted up against the tree so that nobody would cut it down, and I'll be if he didn't back that thing up. And I'm just like, Lord, what is it? What is it? 4 years I planted a fig tree. Every year might cut it down. Accidentally, he forgot. I forgot. So I kind of just, oh, well, it was just a tree. But this time when they butchered this beautiful mimosa tree, I got home and I said to Mike, did you see what they did to my mimosa tree? He said, it'll grow back. And on he went. So last Sunday morning, we took a walk. We live out in the country, and it's beautiful. It was peaceful, cool, breezy. And so we took a walk, and we walked past that mimosa tree, and I said, my mimosa tree. And Mike said, it'll grow back. And he turned around and was ready to walk some more. And I went, that is not what I want to hear from you, honey. He said, well, what do you want to hear? He said, I was trying to be positive. It will grow back. I said, but what I want to hear from you, I want you to understand the hurt and the disappointment, the woundedness I feel over not being able to enjoy the beauty of that tree. I want you to express that you are sad too. Not just it'll grow back. And he said, oh, okay. I didn't know. He said, that's not the way men think. And I said, I know that. So about an hour later, we're driving to church, and Mike said to me, I got some insight today. I said, you did? About what? He said, about women. I said, yay. So on the way home from church, when we drove in the driveway, I went, my beautiful mimosa. And he said, honey, I'm so sorry they cut down your mimosa tree. I said, thank you, honey. He said, but it will grow back. I said, I know it will, but thank you so much for not just saying it'll grow back. But that's how love is. Love is compassionate. Love, it's not that we need to be felt sorry for. We just want someone to relate to our pain. But men and women are so different. I don't know if men will ever really, truly understand women. And I think it's because that rib that they took out of Adam, it was everything feminine. Everything feminine was in that rib. Adam lost everything. You know, God is not man or woman. He is man and woman. He is the total whole. He's the nurture. He's the softness. He's the corrector. He's everything. And he created Adam in his image, did he not? So Adam had that too. He had the softness and everything. But then he saw that Adam needed a helpmate. So he took the rib and made the woman. And he took everything that was soft and understanding and compassionate and nurturing. He took all of that out of Adam in that rib and made the woman. So I really don't think they can ever even get it. But we can help them somewhere along the way. And that's what I tried to do with Mike about this tree. And I think he got it. I think he got it. We'll see if it sticks. But anyway, I mean, he's a compassionate person. But you know, it's the little things. It's the little things. It's the little things in life. It's the little foxes that spoil the vine, but it's also the little things that make the vine sweet. Is it not? And so when we withhold those things, when we need it from heaven, it's like brass. So we need to learn to release love. But guess what? You can't until you have it. And that's where the transformation came in. That night, when I was so depressed, I did not even want to live. And I was crying out. I was just saying, I cannot live like this anymore. God, I just cannot. You've got to help me. And then I had an encounter with Jesus that transformed my life. And what all that he did, really, when I think about it, it's so simple. And it is so simple. But our lives and sin is so complex that it messes it all up so that we can't even get the simple things, the most elemental things from God. And the most important one is the knowledge, the revelation knowledge that he loves us. And when that encounter took place, and he described to me who I was to him, because I realized I had lost myself along the way. The fun-loving, joyful, happy person no longer existed. And I didn't know what happened to her. I didn't know how to get her back. She was gone. She no longer existed, and I didn't even know who I was. And that's when I began to say, Lord, I need to know who I am. I know I'm Mike's wife and Lois and Crofton's daughter and Jerry and David's sister and the granddaughter and, you know, all of these things. Mike's wife and the kid's mother. But I don't know who I am all by myself on my own. And then he came to me and he told me, you are my child. I died for you. That's how much I love you. I voluntarily took that cruelty on the cross so that you could live. You are precious to me. I mean, the sweetest things that he said that nobody could say. And he did it with a look. Didn't even move his mouth. I saw his whole body in his face. But he just was looking at me, and I was so enveloped with this incredible love that it felt like my sternum was cut and my ribs became like the doors of a cage. And I was set free from the lack of love. That's all it was. I just needed the love of God. And he came and he poured that into me, and instantly I was healed of depression. Instantly. The anger left. Everything that I hated was gone. And what I realized was I was in captivity. I was actually in captivity. And when that love came, it just opened up and it just, it, it almost was like a vacuum just, and he just took it all. It was gone. The depression was gone. I was sick. I was sick all the time because when you're depressed, your immune system is not good. I was sick all the time. My body was sick. My mind was sick. My soul was sick. My spirit was sick. But at that moment, the love of God transformed me and changed my life. And I want you to check your love life, because if you're having issues with these things that are listed in 1 Corinthians 13, then you have a love issue. You know, when someone is rude to me now, used to, I would think, well, what did I do? Oh, golly, what did I do? What did this guy ever do? You know, I wouldn't say that to them, but I would think, what did I ever do to them that they should treat me like that? That doesn't even happen anymore. You know why? Because in that depression, I was exactly like that. Everybody was my victim. You didn't have to do one thing to me for me to be rude to you, because I was hurting. I had deep pain. And people who are hurting hurt people. That's just the way it is. I taught my children that even the nicest dog, if you walk by and step on his tail, he's going to snap at you, because pain causes people to be angry and short-tempered and ugly, violent, all those things. When people are hurting, they hurt people. So now, since I've been there, I understand that when people are rude or when people are acting at you in a way that doesn't fit, it doesn't have anything to do with you. It has to do with them. But see, we're so self-absorbed. Everything is about us. It's narcissism. You know that it's a story and it's a myth. I prayed for a girl one time and I commanded the spirit of narcissism to come out. And she said, what is that? And I said, I have no idea. Let me get my dictionary. And, you know, it was God gave it to me. So I looked it up, and it's a mythological story of a man who sees his reflection in the water and falls in love with it. And he can't take his eyes off of this reflection because he's so in love with himself. And I was like that in my pain. It was all about me. Everything. Everything was about me. Whatever you said, it was about me. Whatever was done, it was about me. Now I know how vain we are. But that's narcissism, and it's a demon. It is a demon spirit. So I realize now that I had that, because the whole world, everything that happened or didn't happen, was a personal attack or something on me. It's idolatry is what it is. It's all about idolatry. We make ourselves a god, and then if people don't worship us the way we want to be worshipped, we get bent out of shape. So try to remember the next time that happens to you, that it doesn't have anything to do with you. If a spirit of offense rises up in you, then that's your issue, not theirs. So we want to deal with those things that are causing us to have a love issue ourselves. And it is a love issue. People who are bound up with fear, they just need more love. That's what the word says. Perfect love casts out fear. Fear has torment. Love does not have torment. So everything really revolves around the love issue. Start asking God for more of his love. More of his love. That's what Lord, I need more. I need a fresh anointing of your love today. When I know I'm up against something, Lord, give me a fresh anointing of your love today. Okay, look at Ephesians chapter 3. I don't have a whole lot of scriptures, and then we're going to pray. And then if we have time left, y'all can rest or whatever you want to do. Ephesians chapter 3, verse 14.
This is the end of part A. Please play part B. Our website is www.LakeHamiltonBibleCamp.com and LHBCOnline.com. There are many hundreds of free audio files there. It's like going to Bible school at home. Thank you.